Well, good afternoon to you. Hope you're having a good weekend. It's a little tease of spring. And, man, it was nice to go fishing last week and not be cold. And looks like we can get a little chance to get in some more warm weather. And it's going to be up and down. You know, South Carolina weather. Hang on for a couple hours. It'll change. Except when it gets summer. Then it's just hot and muggy. But, yeah, thanks for tuning in. Taylor is AWOL this week for a pretty good reason. I'm not going to give her too much grief about it. Sometimes our schedule and mine don't sync, and this is one of those weeks. In fact, she's actually will not be able to go to CWE with me. Chemistry exam. Yep. It's and she hates it. Trust me. Gosh, it just – because there's certain things that just – during the year we just do together. And but it's senior year, grades are important, and I don't mind doing this, and but I am going to miss her at CWE, and she'll be back with us next week. I think we got it all planned out for next week. This week got thrown a curveball, and with that curveball came a Facebook message from Brad Brandt with South Carolina Forestry Commission wanting to know if I had time to talk about prescribed burns, controlled fires, and seeing that March is historically here in South Carolina proclaimed by the governor as prescribed fire month. And I said, yes, Brad, let's do it. So we're going to talk to Brad Bramlett with the South Carolina Forestry Commission in the latter part of this show, and it'll be good. It's prescribed fire. It's beneficial for a host of reasons, and we'll get into all of that. But hang on, because that's going to be a good one. Deer hunters, we made Fox News this year. More bucks harvested in 2021 deer season in the past 21 years. This is by Michael Holland, published January 31st. People are really into deer hunting. Yeah, he's right. And with COVID lockdowns and all, people are more and more involved in the outdoors, and it's been a great thing. It says, according to a recent report, the 2021 deer season was the best season for deer hunters across the United States in a decade. The news comes as some states are starting to report slightly lower deer harvest for the most recent season. Americans harvested an estimated 6.3 million deer last year, according to a report from the National Deer Association. This would make it the best season since 2011. The estimated buck harvest is the highest in 21 years. Kip Adams, who's the chief conservation officer for the NDA, said 2020 saw the highest buck harvest in the new century, and amazingly, we estimate that we set another new record for the percentage of those bucks that were 3.5 years old or older. He continued, U.S. hunters are taking fewer yearling bucks and killing more of them as mature deer, but this doesn't mean fewer bucks harvested overall. We're killing older bucks and more bucks than ever in America. And it goes on to talk about Missouri Department of Conservation. And this will be interesting to see. I don't think there's any more that I need to mention here. Oh, according to a news release from, well, that's Missouri. So I guess they did a lot of this information in Missouri. But this will be interesting to see in the next month or so when we have Charles Ruth. He should have the deer harvest report usually done in March. I'm trying to remember when he releases that. But we're going to have him on with the upcoming turkey season. We'll have to kind of put that back and ask him if that's what we're seeing in South Carolina. Also, from the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, they have tagged and released an additional 16 coyotes as part of the incentive programs for hunters. This will make how many years? When was the first year? 2016? Doesn't get me. I believe 2016 was the first year. So 16 times 5. That's 50, if I didn't say, yeah, probably 16 was the first year that they had the tag and release program to incentivize more hunters to take more coyotes. And if, so the reward, it was originally supposed to be a bounty, but there's been so many problems with bounties, they decided the reward for shooting a tagged coyote is a free lifetime hunting license. Yeah, here it is. The release is part of the DNR's Coyote Harvest Incentive Program, which was created in 2016 by the General Assembly. Annually, they trap, tag, and release 16 coyotes, four per game zone. So that's game zone 1, 2, and 3, and 4. According to the DNR, the person reporting the tagged coyote can designate anyone for the lifetime license, such as a child, relative, or friend, or himself. So a total of 96 coyotes have been tagged and released during the past 5 years. About half of those have been reported taken. Let's see here now. Yeah, I mean, if you shoot one, you'll know it. Just be careful. There are, and these have ear tags in them. If you shoot one with a collar, a neck collar, and specific tags from Clemson University, that's a separate deer study they're doing in McCormick County, and I understand some of those coyotes have kind of migrated out of McCormick County and the surrounding counties, and I think one got killed in Abbeville. So if you'll know. You'll know the ear tags as opposed to the collar and the separate tags for the Clemson study. I'm going to run through the calendar events here in the next 3 minutes, 2 minutes. Brought to you by Capital City Lake Murray Country. And we can start out with an oyster roast, February 27th, Magnolia Plantation and Gardens. It's hosted by Keeper of the Wild. It's the annual oyster roast and silent auction from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. They're going to have single selects, chili, and hot dogs, along with beverages and desserts. Tickets, adults 50 and 7 to 12, 25, 6 and under are free, and tickets are already on sale. Meet the in conjunction with the Bassmaster Classic coming to Lake Hartwell and Greenville, you're going to have a couple opportunities to mingle. The first one is at Brushy Creek Baptist Church in Taylor's on February 28th at 6:30. It's Meet the Pros of the Bassmaster Series. They're going to have Q&A, testimonies, and giveaways. You're going to have Brandon Card, Scott Martin, Buddy Gross, David Williams, Nick LeBron, Blake Smith, and my buddy Ronnie Moore from Bassmaster Live is going to be here. So more information, get a hold of Brushy Creek Baptist Church and make this part of your classic experience. On the flip side, the Tuesday, March the 1st, Strike King and Lou's is going to have a Bring the Classic Pro Night to Anderson, South Carolina, where avid fans and anglers here for the 22 Classic can go to the Anderson Civic Center at 6 o'clock on Tuesday, March 1st. Fans there will be able to listen to and meet Hank Parker. And he is the retired pro and host of the Hank Parker's Outdoor Outdoor Magazines. You see, first competitor to win the Grand Slam of Bass Fishing, which includes a bass qualifying event, the Classic and Bass Angler of the Year title, and the Super Bass Tournament. He's a nice guy. He always gives Taylor the boy talk when we see him, which is fun. Along with Hank, you're going to have Mark Zona is going to be there. Host of TV's Zona's Awesome Fishing Show and part of the Bass Live crew. Lou's pro David Fritz, who's known for... Or is that Mark Davis? Gosh, Brandon Cobb told me that one of them fishes whichever one of them, and I think it's David Fritz. Might be right. Fishes all his crankbaits on braid, which is bizarre, but... He said, if you ever look at the front of the boat, and I can't remember now which one it is. Dollar Bill Lowen's going to be there. Yeah, when he walks across the stage, and Dollar Bill Lowen. So anyway, it's a free event, and hope you'll take advantage of that too. Let's see. And then if you want to go over to the dark side, the 2022 Fly Fishing Film Tour is coming to Charleston. Monday, March the 14th, 7:30 p.m., the Charleston Music Hall. Tickets are $20. Doors open at 6:30, and you can get them online, and that's always a fun one to go to. Hadn't been in a while, but it was always a fun show. Just some amazing camera work in fly fishing. So with that, hang on. We're going to talk to Brad Bramlett about control burns, and just remember, fire's your friend. Or Woods and Water, South Carolina, on the other side of the break. I wish the words came up a little faster on this one because of what we're going to talk about today, but it is bad company. It's no smoke without a fire, and providentially, and a lot of you that have schedules that just get thrown into a blender from week to week know what that's like. You're sitting there, your head spinning, like, what am I going to do this week? And out of nowhere, a text lands, our message lands on Facebook. It's from a good friend, and he's like, hey, we need to talk about X. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. This is – you can't script any better than that. And this week's savior is Brad Bramlett. He's with the Sacramento Forestry Commission. Brad, we've done this before. It's been a while, but welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Gosh, there's just – I mean, springtime is so busy. It's so much to get out there and do. The fishing gets better and stuff like that. But man, habitat managers, foresters, landowners who have trees planted, this is the time of the year when fire is your friend.
It is. It surely is.
And you were out burning this morning.
I was. I certainly was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
took advantage of the great weather.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You get a little dry spell, which is, you know, when you're trying to burn outside, you know, sometimes it's wet is good when you're burning those big trash piles and all. I like to have a little dreary day where I have to have a little diesel fuel to help things along. But when you're burning out in the open woods or across, you know, pastures and stuff like that, you got to have that weather in consideration. And today was a good day to burn.
It was. It certainly was.
Take just a minute for those who haven't. And I look back, I think we did this after the Pinnacle Mountain Fire.
We did.
And Brad, we talked about it. May have been a couple of years, a few years. That fire was November and December of 2016.
It was. So it was the fall of 2016.
Yeah, so we talked probably in 17. So it's been more than a few years, Brad.
Time flies.
It does. It absolutely does. But we'll just take just a moment and introduce yourself, and then we'll get rolling on this prescribed fire thing.
Okay, sure. Well, my name is Brad Brown. I'm the Assistant Regional Forester with the South Carolina Forestry Commission. And so with the Forestry Commission, our regions are split, the state split into three regions. So the Piedmont region is the third of the upstate of South Carolina.
Okay.
I've been with the state for 30 years and work outdoors. I love working outside. And when you and I spoke last time,
yeah,
you mentioned the Pinnacle Mountain Fire. That was the costliest, largest upstate mountain fire in South Carolina.
I think $3 million, $31 million or $3 million. I forget what y'all spent on
that. It was over $5 million.
Okay, yeah.
Just a little over 10,000 acres.
Yeah. And that started from campfire.
It started from an escape campfire. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Not an intentional. That's just one of those oopsies that just kind of.
It wasn't intentional.
Yeah.
Somebody, you know, trying to campfire, and it just got away from them.
Yeah. And there again, all the ingredients were there for a fire, and up in that area, that's a hard fire to fight.
It was. Yep. And if you remember. The fall of 2016, we were extremely dry, had a lot of drought conditions.
Yes.
It was just the right recipe for a really bad wildfire.
And I remember in all the reporting and stuff like that, you know, you were trying to, even though you were trying to fight that fire and get that thing, you were aware of, okay, if we cut fire breaks here, we're going to have washing and stuff like that. So at the same time, you're trying to get that fire down. You're trying to protect the environment as much as you could while you were trying to control the fire.
We did. And as a matter of fact, as the fire was moving from west to east, it was going toward Table Rock State Park, which is, you know, one of the more popular state parks in South Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
We thought we could cut it off before it actually got to the rock, but we just realized, you know, we couldn't. So what we ended up doing was fighting fire with fire. We realized it was going toward an area where it had some homes.
Right.
We made the decision to actually put in brakes. And actually set fire and do a backfire and burn out over like 1,000 acres.
Yep. And it comes back. That's the beauty about fire. That's what a lot of people, you know, I have a good friend who's married his wife is from California. And, oh, man, you mentioned fire around her, and she just, it's deer in the headlights, like the fire.
Yeah.
You know, but it's totally different environment here to California.
It is.
Totally different fire danger and stuff like that. But here in the Southeast, Fire is good. It is, the benefits are almost immeasurable. Whether you're
right.
a timber management guy, whether you're a wildlife enthusiast, or whatever. And, you know, hey, we got to admit burning stuff is fun.
Yes. Yep. As long as you do it right under the right conditions.
As long as you do it right. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked the other day, March is historically controlled burn month here in South Carolina. I understand you're waiting on Governor McMaster to give that back to you and make it official again this year.
Yes, we are. It's gone back. Several governors past have announced as March as Prescribed Fire Awareness Month. And basically what that does is just shows the importance of what prescribed fire does, what it means, and we anticipate it will be done again for this coming March.
Cool. Well, let's jump into it. And, you know, you always start off with pronouns. I think the pronouns, when, where, how, why, all that stuff. You know, we talk about when, now this time of the year. What's, I guess you're looking for specific weather, wind. I mean, when you're talking about wind and weather, talk just a moment about what you're looking for as far as the environment around you when you're having a controlled burn.
Okay, sure. Well, if you think about it, Roger, prescribed fire has been around for thousands of years. The Native Americans actually did prescribed burning here in North America. Even when the settlers got here, they used it. It was a great tool. The Native Americans used it for various things, and then the settlers saw it and they said, okay, well, that's something that we can use. It mimics what was happening when lightning storms would hit. It would burn, you know, sometimes days or maybe even weeks.
Sure.
But what we used it as foresters and fire managers, we would normally use it coming up into February, March, sometimes maybe even in January, but you would do it sometimes usually a few days after rain. You want to have a little bit of soil moisture in there. You don't want to burn all the way down to the ground. You want to burn off that top duff layer. So usually sometimes a few days after rain.
Okay.
And the reason we call it prescribed fire or sometimes controlled fire is you're doing it under prescribed conditions. You want to have the wind correct, the humidity, the temperature right. So you're doing it under just the right conditions to where you want this fire to do just what you want it to do. Not just you have a wildfire that burns uncontrolled, but
right.
This fire is doing it under the right conditions and we're managing.
Speaking of management and managing that fire breaks.
Sure. Yep. So you make a good point. We don't just go out there and strike a match and let it just go anywhere. What we do is if you go back to the fire triangle, you've got fuel, moisture. So when that fire goes out there, you got to have a way to stop it.
Sure.
So we go out there and we use like a bulldozer, a way to go out there and plow down to the mineral soil, to the ground. And then when the fire gets up to it, it goes out. When we go in and start the fire, we start in the downwind side of where the wind's coming from.
Right.
We set the fire and let it back off a ways, usually about 20, 30 feet. And then that sets off enough of a, what we call like a buffer area. And then we can go in interior of that and then start setting in spot fires or head fires.
You know, which is exactly what we did here. The first time we burned here, you know, our forester shows up with a couple of drip torches, well, more than a couple of drip torches and all his equipment and all. And mostly, of course, it was fun. I enjoyed doing it. I ran the drip torch all day long. He rode around the four-wheeler kind of management. But that's
right.
Exactly what he did. He told me, he said, you want to go in about 10 feet off your fire break on the downwind side. He said, mm-hmm. You walk the entire length of that fire break and let it burn to the fire break. And he was, you know, we watched that line very carefully to make sure nothing
–
burn and setting it downwind, that fire would creep into the wind, but it really came out to that fire line pretty quick. And as soon as it was out, he's all right, go in about 30 yards and give me another line. And from there
right.
on out, you really weren't worried about it jumping that fire break.
That first one you do is what you call your baseline. And once you get okay. that one set or your black line, then you've got a good place to start, and then you feel comfortable that you can widen it up and get further up into the woods and start making it a little bit wider. That's
cool.
Exactly right.
Well, we talked about fire breaks, so we got a couple of minutes. Talk about some of the other tools. In about 2 minutes, Give us some of the other tools you're going to use when you're doing control burns.
All right. Well, first of all, you mentioned your drip torch. You use your drip torch, and the mixture you use is usually 2/3 diesel and 1/3 gas. That mixture goes through, and it makes when that fuel comes out, it's not really a gel. It's just enough that it's not flammable.
Okay.
You're going to have, we mentioned a dozer. We use something that's called a Numex. It's a very burn resistant type clothing.
Okay.
If you're a landowner, you may or may not use that, but you want to use something at least that's cotton.
Okay.
You want to use 100% cotton. That's something that's not going to catch on fire.
Huh.
Cotton.
Don't use polyester then.
Yeah, you do not, because polyester would actually catch on fire. And it would burn to your skin, and then when you pull it off, your skin's going to come off with it.
Ouch.
Yes. So, actually, cotton, and sometimes when I burn with my Nomex, I would use 100% cotton up under my Nomex material. Yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm. In place of a bulldozer, you can. I mean, I've got a 6-foot cultivator on the back of the tractor, and that makes a really nice fire break.
It does. It does. We have landowners that use, some kind of cultivator that can till it up. You could go in with an ATV that's got some kind of skid unit with a pump that you can go in and put in a wet line.
Okay.
Any way that you can get down to the ground and either remove that flammable leaves, pine straw, or put in some kind of a wet line, one or the other.
I gotcha. When y'all burn in it, we got about 30 seconds here. I mean, when you're burning Richland County, you're burning, I think, 50 acres, you told me. How many guys do you have on scene?
We usually have one or two dozers, and then we're going to have 3 or 4 personnel there with us.
Mm-hmm. More than merry, because really, control burn, it is kind of a social event. It's kind of
neat. Well, it is. It is, and you want to have a few people carrying the torches through the woods, and then you also want to have people around the perimeter watching for spots that are going to jump out across the line.
Absolutely. Well, we got a good start to it, Brad. Let's keep it going. Everybody hang on. We're going to be back after the break. More Woods and Water, South Carolina, and Control Burn with Brad Bramlett from the South Carolina Forestry Commission. Oh, nothing better than spring in the South. And, you know, Brad, I hate to say this, but I'm almost like done with winter. and I'm ready for spring now. As long as spring could be March, April, May, and part of into June. You know, if we get 3 good months of spring, I'll be happy.
Well, you know, it almost felt like it today a little bit.
It did. It did. And you know, I don't. Of course, you don't know. This time of the year, you can get sunburn and frostbite in the same day. So
it kind of teases you, though.
It
does.
It
feels a little bit warm, and then you know, there's going to be another cold snap.
It's just real quick. My brother has been up in Minnesota. His congratulations. He's a granddaddy for the second time.
Okay.
But you know, it was, you know, most of the time it was. Nighttime lows were below zero, and daytime's, you know, 6 to 7 to 8 degrees. And he said the other day when he pointed it south and it got to 20 degrees, he said, "Man, it's nice." He said, and then he called me back the other day and he said, It's 40 something degrees here in Kentucky. I said, "Well, don't show up here in flip flops and shorts." He said, "No, but the chamois shirt he had on might have to come off." So, oh man, but yeah, South Carolina will tease you with the weather.
It does.
Talking about, you know, your duties here in South Carolina, you know, you've been doing it a long time. And I know every year you post up on social media, you're headed somewhere. And I think I saw you head to Oregon this year, and I forget where else you went. Talk about when you go off and you're going off to essentially do your job that you do here in South Carolina elsewhere to help people with their wildfires. Talk about where you've been this year already.
Okay, so yes, this past year I did 2 out-of-state assignments. One I went to Oregon and one I went to California.
And those were all on helping them with the fires they had going on.
That's right. So the first one was the Bootleg Fire in Oregon. And at that time, it was the largest fire in the country. And then, unfortunately, when I went down to the Dixie Fire, it turned out to be the largest fire in the country. And that was in California.
You know, take a minute. What is so different about California?
Well, it's one thing is their climate is so different out there. So you think about the South and how we have so much humidity here.
Right.
You know how it's just sometimes you go outside and it feels like you're getting hit with a wet blanket.
Oh, yeah. You took another bath.
Well, out there, it's so dry. In fact, they actually have, when those fires get so big, they would have what they call an incident meteorologist assigned to the wildfire. And he would stay there full time.
Okay.
And so in the morning at their briefings, they would talk about what they call percent chance of ignition.
Okay.
Which means when the wildfires would occur, and you know they would have the wildfire inside the perimeter of the fire breaks that they put in.
Uh-huh.
But they would say if an ember flew out of the fire and landed, most of the time they would say if that ember landed outside of the fire break, it would be 100% chance of ignition.
Wow.
Which over here in the East, if an ember blew out, just like if you sat around a campfire,
sure,
and you saw an ember,
yeah,
land, most of the time it would go out. It wouldn't do anything.
Yeah, it goes out
over
as
there,
it's rising.
It's usually 75 to 100% chance of ignition.
Okay. And
just
then
because it's so dry.
Yeah, and then you got those Pacific winds.
You got the Santa Ana winds, right, and the other winds that they have out there that are just so strong that those strong winds coupled with the very low humidity is just, it's very hard for them to contain.
Wow. Wow. That's yeah. You see those pictures on the news at night and all, and it's, I can't imagine what it's like on the ground where you are.
But you know,
yeah.
I guess they just do it for so long and they just been doing it for so many years that, you know, it's just become a culture of firefighting out there for them. And you hate to say that, but they get used to it.
Yeah. It's a job. It's a
it
job.
Is. Mm-hmm.
It's a job. Well, I think in the first segment, we pretty much covered the when and the how. Where are you going to do control burns here in South Carolina?
Well, that's a good question, Roger. So we do them for landowners with the Forestry Commission, and a landowner could do it for themselves. Most of what is burned is in pines.
Okay.
You can do them in hardwoods. Usually you want to make sure the pines are 14, 15 years old, just because pines have developed a thicker bark system,
okay,
versus your hardwood. Some hardwoods, they can do burning. And the reason you're doing people, a lot of people just don't understand, well, why do you do burning? It just doesn't make sense. Well,
okay,
the reason we're burning is my number one reason is hazard reduction. What people have to think about is you got to think of pine needles, leaves, and those twigs,
sure,
as fuel.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
We call that as fuel. And what we're doing is we're reducing the fuel to greatly reduce the chance of a wildfire. So if you think you go out there and you walk in your woods and it's 1, 2, 3 inches thick of that, what we call that duff layer of, are those needles, pine straw.
Sure.
And we go in there and do a prescribed burn. Well, then you come back down and instead of it being 3 inches, now it's only a quarter inch.
Right.
Well, then if a wildfire does occur in there, either it's going to go all the way out or it's going to burn extremely slow. So we've greatly reduced the chance of a wildfire coming in through there. Well, also you can reduce hardwoods. So if you got a pine stand and you got a lot of sweet gum,
right,
and maple and other undesirable hardwoods in there, you can reduce those. Now, oaks, thankfully, have a very strong root system.
Okay.
They can withstand a lot of fire, whereas sweet gum and maple can't. So it actually does favor oaks.
Okay.
And then the other great thing is it does improve wildlife habitat. So you can go out there, like, for instance, I told you today we burned down in Lower Richland County.
Right.
I can go back out in that same stand in 3 or 4 weeks and there'll be all these nice green succulent shoots starting to come up. And deer and turkey especially love those areas.
Sure.
They've done studies. I was at a workshop one time to where they had radio collar telemetry on turkeys. And right after they done a burn, that very same day, turkeys went back in there. And they think that over time that the turkeys know that after a burn, there's going to be a lot of insects in there. They immediately go in there to try to get those insects.
Sure. And that's right after the burn. You start getting that green up a little bit, and that becomes a prime bugging area for your ground nesters, your turkeys, your quail here in South Carolina. And, of course, deer love nice, tender green browse.
They do.
So it's a benefit at all. And we've touched on it just a little bit. You know, when you burn that stuff, that's a nutrient that's going back in the soil.
It does.
And it does. And it's, you're not losing anything. You're gaining by burning. You're actually gaining essentially fertilizer.
Yeah, so you're doing some nutrient recycling.
Yeah.
That does go back into the soil. So you're putting some of that back in for the trees and those other plants that are coming in that ecosystem right there around your trees. That's exactly right.
Let's flip side. We got about 2 minutes left in the segment, 2.5 minutes. When you talk about fuel loads, you know, we talked about having 3 inches. That's a fuel load, no trouble with carrying a fire. On the other end of things, though, talk about, you know, not having the fuel load. I mean, you might not be able to burn because you don't have a fuel load to carry that fire.
Yeah, so if you've, say, thinned a stand, if you planted some trees and you do your first thinning at, say, 14, 15 years old.
Okay.
Most of the time, we say wait 2 to 3 years after you thin because you want to have enough needles to drop down on the ground to carry that fire. You do want to have enough fuel down there because if not, it's not going to get a good burn through there.
Right. Yeah. And you waste your time.
You'll be walking all day long. And you want to have enough good fire around the stem of those little sweet gums and
right.
maples and other stuff in there just to get a good top kill on those trees.
Got about a minute. What's the, you know, when they talk about when you do control burns, the crown of the tree getting to 125 degrees. Is that true? I mean, depending on time of the year, what does that?
And a lot of it has to do with how open the stand is. So
okay.
If you've got a really closed canopy stand, in other words, the first time you go in and burn a stand, if the trees haven't been thinned, you do want to burn them a little bit cooler.
Okay.
Because you want the stand to be, you want that heat to get up through the canopy of the trees.
Not get trapped.
That's right.
Okay.
So I'd like to burn a stand that hasn't been thinned cooler.
Okay. I gotcha.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And it's amazing. You know, you can hack and squirt sweet gums to your heart's content, but when you go through and run a control burn through a stand of pine trees, it gets them all.
It does.
It's an amazing thing. And then like we said, you know, it's not going to waste. That's gonna rot, it's gonna fall back on the ground, it's gonna be fuel for your next burn. And
yep.
And the process is just continually resetting itself.
Mm-hmm.
And keeps y'all in business, keeps landowners like me happy because we get to burn every once in a while, and you know, everybody's happy. So, all right, let's do it all. Let's take a break, come back, and Brad, we'll carry on another segment as long as we got time and stuff to talk about. So,
sounds good.
More Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side of the break. This one's always got an awkward opening, but it's a good one. Hang on. There you go. The opening of the Caddyshack. That's the movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's the movie entrance to it, because you got the little uh-oh. Oh, man. It's not a groundhog. What is it?
Gopher? Or,
yeah, the gopher. There you go.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. The Caddyshack gopher in there. Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a great movie.
That's a great movie. They don't make movies like that anymore.
No.
Oh, me. But, yeah, I appreciate everybody tuning in today. We've been talking about control burns, you know, when you want to do them, how you want to do them, where you want to do them, some of the benefits to the wildlife, to your value of your trees, you know, to getting rid of some of the woody competition you may have in your wildfires. Speaking of the woody competition, you know, we talked about how a control burn will go through and it'll kill off all the sweet gums and stuff like that. But during the break, we were talking, and you said, you know, it'll top kill them, but you still got some stump regrowth. Talk about that for just a second, and then I want to go into how often you want to do a control burn, because that'll affect the resurgence of your sweet gums and that sort of thing. So it's all kind of interconnected. But talk about the sweet gum trees a little bit more.
Yeah, sure. So when you do a control burn, it will, most of the time, as y'all well know, sweet gums are very prolific. And just as a in case you're ever out on a trivia, sweet gum is the number one. It's the most common hardwood in South Carolina. So there's your little tidbit for tonight.
There you go.
trivia night somewhere. But yeah, it's a very prolific tree. But yeah, when you burn it, most of the time it will, basically what you're doing is you're top killing, and it will come back the next year. So you usually will want to do a setup on a 2 to 3 year rotation.
Okay.
And that's going to depend on how your budget's looking.
Okay.
You know, you can go it out 3 or 4 years, something like that. But, and the more rotations you do, you will knock it back.
Okay.
It's not going to be as prolific as the more rotations that you do.
Okay. I gotcha. Yeah. You know, sweet gums, and I have a little story here on sweet gums. When York County and the Department of Natural Resources bought the Draper property up in Brattonsville, at that time, Three Rivers Chapter of Quail Unlimited, which I was a member of here in Chester, I think it was Chester, York, and Lancaster County, I think it was Three Rivers. We did a lot of work over there. And right after they bought that area, the National Quail Unlimited Conference was in Charlotte. And we were doing bus tours of Draper. And at that time, we had a drum chopper going down there. And, you know, they were putting roads in and just kind of reclaiming that property back to where it was wildlife friendly and all. And so we were going through on a bus tour, and I was kind of telling people what was going on and all. And I said, and the drum chopper is a great tool with invasive trees and you know, opening up wildlife habitat and all that. And there was a couple sitting just front row in front of me in the bus as I was trying facing everybody, and I noticed they kind of looked at each other, and as I went on, and I could tell, and the lady finally, she kind of raised her hand, she goes, "Excuse me, we're from Kansas, what's an invasive tree?" And I was like, "Stop the bus." I got off the bus, I grabbed a sweet gum leaf, it was springtime, I grabbed a sweet gum leaf and a sweet gum ball, and I came back, handed it to her. I said, "Introducing you to the sweet gum tree. It is the most invasive tree here in South Carolina."
Oh my gosh.
And it just rolled on the floor. I mean, we're from Kansas. What's an invasive tree? I was like, "Oh yeah. Welcome to sweet gums."
Oh yes.
But they are, and they just pop up everywhere.
They do.
But you can burn them, you can hack and squirt them, you can control them. It takes some effort.
It does.
And I've hacked and burned around, hacked and squirted around here. It's a very effective tool.
Very
effective. I think I might have had my mixture a little bit too strong and squirted too much, because around each sweet gum tree, I had like a 2-foot area where the grass wasn't growing.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did them, and I did them well. get down to the end here.
Oh, and the other thing we talked about too, Roger, was timing of the year, you know, dormant versus growing season.
Yes.
So,
yep.
Right now, we're coming out of the dormant season, so you can do some in December and January. A lot of times, those are wet times of the year, but you can do some burning in there, and that would be considered dormant season. As long as the sap's not flowing in the trees, that's considered dormant.
Okay.
You start getting into the growing season when the sap starts rising in the trees. I did a burn in Union County one year, and the sweet gums had started growing.
Okay.
The leaves had sprouted out. Roger, we had a very low intensity burn. I'm like, I didn't think it had done much of anything. But what happens is when those trees are very vulnerable, then you don't have to have a much intensity burn at all.
Wow.
We really hammered those sweet gums. I went back about a month or so later and checked on
Yeah.
them, and we really put a hurting on those sweet gums.
You know, I guess what you have to balance is between dormant and growing season is your wildlife concerns. I mean, you don't want to go out there and burn when your turkeys are already on the ground nesting or, you know, something like that. So I'm sure when you talk to a forester or consult with whoever, that's one of those questions y'all are going to have to work out when you're
Oh, yeah.
planning these things.
It is. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about. Oh, that's right. We were talking because Michael Hook's been on here talking about the wildlife focal areas, and when
Yes.
you and I were talking, you mentioned that, hey, I sit on the committee then on some of these focal areas. I'm like, well, this is great. I can get your opinion. So talk just a minute about these focal areas and what y'all are seeing with your controlled burns and the wildlife.
Yeah, so the Indian Creek Initiative is a focal area in Newberry County, and it's a basically a multi-discipline committee. It's got several state, federal groups,
Okay.
nonprofit groups that are on there, and we have basically seen with these groups coming together and working that the bobwhite quail is really starting to be seen more and heard more in this focal area on the I guess that's up the part of the Sumter there.
Right, yes, yeah, some part of something. And that's a collaboration between not only national forests but private landowners.
It is, and they're seeing not only, you're right, not only on the national forest, but we have when especially when it first started, a lot of the private landowners there at one time there were federal funding for them to do some different cost share practices.
Okay.
But when the funding went away, they were still kept on doing some of the work. And
Okay.
yeah, they're definitely hearing some of the quail in those areas.
And that's one of those benefits. Quail need those open bugging areas. They need afterwards, they need that low ground cover that comes up in those areas. That because, you know, between you and I and everybody else that's listening, a pine forest is a pretty desolate landscape when it comes to wildlife left to its own, you know.
Right.
You got to get rid of that duff we've been talking about. Let sunlight get to that floor and let that natural seed bed or whatever inventory is there, come up. And it benefits those wildlife. And we've done it here. I've actually got two coveys of wild quail back, which is just astounding because I grew up quail hunting. We didn't have deer. We grew up bird hunting, you know, and quail and your turkey or something. Hand in hand with that, in Newberry County, there is a fire trailer.
There is, and they actually were able to get some funds through that initiative to buy a prescribed burn trailer. The Natural Resources Conservation Service (NRCS) and the Soil Water Conservation District oversee it. Contact them. They've got drip torches. They got rakes. All of it's there, self-contained. You can just pull it out there. So it's something, and the other thing is, from
Yeah.
my understanding, it has not really been utilized that much. So it would be great for the landowners to be able to utilize that.
You know, if you've got good fire breaks and you've got the equipment, then this is from a landowner standpoint, is a control burn something you really got to worry about, or is it something when you do it right, you should feel comfortable doing it?
Well, and that's the thing. I know some landowners are a little bit apprehensive about it, and there are some things that they could either do it themselves. Now, another service, you could either hire the Forestry Commission to do it or a consulting forester. The other thing they could do is they could, if they want to do it themselves, they could actually hire us to come do standby, and they could get a dozer out there to be on standby while they do the burn. So there's
Okay.
actually three different things they could do.
Do it on their own, have somebody do it for them, or just call y'all and have it on standby.
That's right. And basically what that means is they'll do the burn and our
Okay.
dozer would be there on standby just in case something happens.
Okay.
And it kind of gives them sort of like a safety net.
Sure. Because it can get away. I mean, you know,
It can.
whether you're, you know, one of my first experiences with fire getting out was late in January, and I lit off just a trash pile, and out of nowhere the wind picked up, and it started out across some old buckwheat and sorghum rows that I'd planted, and it traveled very fast. So it is, you have to be careful.
Another thing they can do to make them feel a little bit more comfortable is a few times of the year, our agency has what we call a certified prescribed fire manager course that we teach in Columbia. Tells them about burning. Now, one thing in South Carolina, anytime you do a prescribed burn, you have to call it into our dispatch center. They'll do a notification. Yep. They'll go in. You talk about smoke sensitive area, your tonnage, the whole nine yards. So you can't, again, you can't just go out there and burn. There's a process that they have to go through.
And that is different from notifying the county you live in that you're going to burn a trash pile.
It is. It's two totally, totally different things.
Yes.
If you're burning like yard debris or trash pile, each county has its own 1-800 number just for that. But when you're doing forestry, wildlife, or agricultural burn, there's a 1-800 number that you call and talk to a live person to get notification to do that. That's totally separate. That's correct.
I've run afoul of that once. Oh, man, this has been great, Brad. We're almost out of time. If somebody wants to contact the Forestry Commission, who do they call and who they want to talk to?
What I would say, Roger, the best thing I would have them do is if they can go to our website, scfc.gov, there's a place on there where they can look and by any of the counties and find out who their local contact person is.
Okay, cool. Well, Brad, this has been great. I really appreciate you doing it on short notice.
No problem. Always good to talk to you, my friend.
Absolutely, and we'll do this again another time.
Sure.
Until then, folks, y'all have a good weekend, the rest of the weekend. Make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget that camera. See you back here next week. Maybe Taylor will be back. More Woods and Water, South Carolina. Gone, gone, gone.